ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians, called to a higher level of understanding, will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening. This is Brother Mike of Kingdom Identity Ministries, welcoming you to another one of our first of the month live Kingdom Concepts programs. We're being heard tonight over shortwave radio station WWCR, 4.840 megahertz and 3.215 megahertz as transmitter 3 and transmitter 1, and also WBCQ, 7.490 megahertz. You can listen to both of those stations by going to their links over the internet, or you can go to our radio page, kingidentity.com, kingidentity.com, and then go to our radio page and you'll see links both for the Kingdom Concepts broadcast and for the two shortwave stations there. If you'd like to participate in tonight's program, you can call our toll-free number, 877-924-7722. You can remember that by 877-YAWS-RACE. For those who are out of the country and may not be able to access the toll-free number, such as my guest tonight from England, the number direct is 678-949-5091. Matthew 5:10-11 tells us, "Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake." This is the topic we will be discussing tonight, especially as it relates to Brother Miko, one of our ministry's trustees currently imprisoned in England. The British judicial system acts unlawfully and no longer upholds the honorable standards of justice that it once did. The same can be said for the United States and most of the world due to the Antichrists who rule over us. To develop this subject and related subjects, my guest is a man who has spent a tremendous amount of time assisting with paralegal help in this case and that of other Christian patriots, Mike Whitby. Also, who hasn't hooked up yet, but I hope will be joining us from England tonight, will be Paul Cook, who will contribute to the discussion by speaking of the spiritual insight given through natural law and our sovereign rights. Both of these men are knowledgeable in their fields, and I'd like to welcome right now Mike Whitby to the broadcast.
Thank you, Mike. Good evening. It's the early hours of the morning here, but it's the evening where you are, so yes, good evening to all.
Well, why don't you start by telling us what took place with Miko and what is the current status of his case? And if Paul joins the broadcast, he can jump in with his comments at a later time.
Great. Well, I'll go through this as quickly as I can. I've written down 9 stages so far, Mike, just to save, you know, because I could talk forever on this subject, and obviously that wouldn't benefit anybody. So I'll keep it as brief as I can to the different headings. First of all, Miko was imprisoned unlawfully because for a multitude of reasons, because, you know, the police, the judiciary, the court, the judge, the jury, nobody acted lawfully. The judge constantly, many, many times, misdirected the jury. He only needs to do one unlawful thing in order for that conviction order to be void. And he did about 47. I studied the whole transcript of the case for over a year. I'm not a lawyer, incidentally. I'm not trained in law except for what I've done over the last 10 years, which is mainly the constitutional and common law. Because legislation, I don't really care about, to be quite frank with you, because it's any legislative act that contravenes our constitutional common law requires our consent to become law, and we're not obliged to consent to it. So anyway, coming back to Mikko, because of all the unlawful acts that took place, that rendered the judgment voidable, which means that all that is required is a declaration of void order should be chronicled, itemized, and then issued to the courts with a request for a set aside to have him released from prison. So I did that.
Could you tell us a little bit about what he was charged with in the first place, which isn't even a crime in this country?
Well, that's right. You know, he was charged with two counts. First of all, the first one was being a member of a proscribed organization. Now, what they mean by that is, proscribed is banned. There's an organization, or there was an organization called National Action, and they were not violent whatsoever. They never did anything. The only time they got involved in violence is when they were being attacked by Antifa and, the Reds, when they had to defend themselves. In fact, on one occasion in Liverpool, I wasn't a member of that organization, but, we witnessed a lot of the things that they did, and most of what they did was on the internet anyway. And it was never violent. They were speaking very bluntly and plainly about who the controllers are and what's going on in the world. And that is the big problem because, as we discussed off air, our judiciary and our parliament don't like people telling the truth about the controllers. So anyway, on one occasion, in fact, the National Action people were being attacked by Antifa in Liverpool, and the police got in between them. And one police officer fell to the floor and was being kicked and trampled by all these communists. And several of these National Action people put their own lives at risk to save this police officer from being killed by these people. And that was never mentioned when they were brought to court. So, they were, the proscription against their organization was based on the lie that they were a terrorist organization. And, in order to comply with the law of terrorism, there needs to be violence or the threat of violence involved in the organization. And no evidence was presented to Parliament whatsoever to make that, enable that act to go through Parliament. But the corrupt MPs put it through Parliament anyway. As I mentioned earlier, off air, and just a few moments ago, that is an act of legislation. And it cannot contravene our constitutional law. If it does, then it requires our consent. And we're not obliged to consent. So it should never have gone through Parliament. That's the first thing. So it really was just an excuse to stop everybody talking about nationalism. Because, if an organization like that, who was not the slightest bit violent, if they can be regarded as a terrorist organization, then every one of the nationalist organizations can be put in the same category. Unless we nip it in the bud, which is why I got involved in this. Even though I wasn't involved in that organization, I could see the ramifications of how it would affect every one of us if we just ignored it and left these, these people in prison. And most of them are young people under the age of 40, many of which are academics, very bright people. You know exactly what they're talking about. They've researched and studied the subjects that they were talking about. And the last thing our corrupt rulers want is a crop of youngsters, relative youngsters, from the age of 20 up to 40, who know exactly what they're talking about. They can all communicate very well. They understand the law. They understand the history of what they're talking about. Now, people like that are very dangerous to the snakes of this world, because, you know, they can expose what's going on. So they you know,
like I asked you off the air earlier, are there not any patriots in the legislature or the parliament there in Great Britain that would stand up for people's rights?
I, to be honest with you, I can only think of one individual. We have two houses like you have in America. Ours is the House of Commons and the House of Lords. And the only individual that I can bring to mind who I would say is kind of on our side, slightly leaning towards Zionism, to be perfectly honest, but, you know, that aside, he gets a lot of truths across, and his name is Lord Pearson. Now, he's been, for several years now, he's been saying much the same as we have been saying, but he's demonized for it. As you can imagine, anyone who's telling the truth is demonized. But one man on his own, or even if it were a dozen or so, it wouldn't be enough, because the vast majority would just shout them down, and they behave like school children in our parliament. If anybody's saying something they don't like, they just shout, like, keep on shouting to crowd them out, which is disgraceful. You know, in the 21st century, for elected members of parliament to be behaving like that is appalling. Anyway, back to the Mikko situation. I issued that declaration of void order last November. I then wrote six times over the next 2 months to the court that convicted him, asking for a set-aside, which he's entitled to, because the, you know, the conviction order was now null and void and dead, effectively. But they refused to issue it. So I then went to the next stage, which is habeas corpus, to apply for a writ of habeas corpus to get Mikko released from prison. Now, the law of habeas corpus states that you don't need to provide chapter and verse, excuse me, in order to get somebody released under habeas corpus. All you need to do is present prima facie evidence to a court, and then the person who's holding the prisoner in prison, i.e. the governor, becomes the defendant in the case. So I'm bringing the case, I'm the applicant, the prison governor is the defendant, and it's him who's got to prove his reasons are lawful for keeping Mikko in prison. Now, that's the way the law states that it should happen, but the prison governor has been allowed to get away with all of that. Instead of him issuing a statement, or in reality, an affidavit, which is a lot stronger than a statement, that's what he's required to do. The courts, three judges so far, have allowed him to get away with not having any involvement at all, which is, you know, it's incredible to think that this could happen. But, you know, that's what's happened. So he not only refused to issue a statement or an affidavit, he blocked all contact between me and my client, Mikko, which is not only unlawful at any level, it's also contempt of court to do that while a court is in place, is in session effectively. The indictment has already been laid, and for him to block communications is contempt of court. So he should be in prison himself for what he's done, but he's been allowed to get away with it. So then the judges that were ruling on the application for habeas corpus, they rejected it. Now, they didn't reject it on the evidence that I'd provided. They did a judicial trick and rejected it on two counts. Firstly, that I don't have enough standing. This is a nonsense thing that's crept into the British judiciary. You've got to have standing in order to represent somebody in the High Court. Now, if it was a normal case, whether civil or criminal, then I would require standing, even though it's still unlawful, but under their rules, I would still require standing in order to represent my client in the High Court. Now, what standing means is I would have to be a barrister, one of these guys who earns like £3,000 or £4,000 a day, and, you know, they're just theatre orators, really, you know, and But those are the sort of things that they want. The reason they have those people representing people in the high court is that they won't go against the judge. They will do exactly what the judge tells them to do, whether they're on the prosecution or the defense side. And they all get along very well. They all earn their big bucks, and you know, they keep people in prison falsely. So anyway, this judge, Judge Yip, her name is, Y-I-P, married to a Chinese guy, she ruled against me, saying that I didn't have the standing. Well, you don't need standing for a habeas corpus application. Anybody can do it. You don't need to be a lawyer, because anyone can do it. It doesn't matter which court it's going to. So even by their own rules, that is wrong. The second thing she...
You don't have any patriot-type lawyers there in the UK?
We do
similar
have
that would help you out?
Yeah, we do have some, but they're not allowed to. And that might sound a bit daft, but if a lawyer does what we're doing, basically invoking the law of the land and ignoring the rules of a judge, because the rules of a judge in this case are unlawful, but they go along with it. They go along with it because that judge will stop them earning a living. If they go against the judge and he disbars them, they lose their job as a lawyer or a barrister. And they can't put food on the table. They can't keep a roof over their family's head. So, you know, they don't do it. They just go along with it. So nobody who's earning a living in that field will do what we're doing, because, you know, they're frightened. And, you know, we're demonized. I'm actually retired now, but, you know, before I was doing this before I retired, and I became unemployable because, you know, the powers that be make you, to use an Old Testament term, excommunicated, so that nobody wants to employ you, nobody wants to deal with you or buy or sell anything to you or from you, so that you're ostracized from community. From the whole community, and demonized as some kind of, you know, heathen that's not to be listened to, you know. So we suffer that on a regular basis, but you know, it's part of the thing we're involved in. You know, you can't expect to get away with it if you're going to expect to expose the truth.
Well, we expect it biblically too. As I read at the start of the broadcast, blessed are those which are persecuted for righteousness' sake. I should mention that shortly after we went on the air, Paul joined us on the book up here, and feel free to just jump in with your comments as you feel led.
Thank you, Mike. I did hold my peace and just listen to the introduction and to Mike's explanation of the Miko case. So thank you very much indeed for introducing that and welcoming me into the conversation. I did listen very interestingly to the comments about the court structures, and I'm very interested to discuss that, obviously. So I'm quite interested to see if the listeners understand the implications of the system itself and how it's structured, because as Mike has kindly mentioned, it is very much a closed circle, and the people involved in the legal system very much run it as a club, as an exclusive club, and those who aren't part of that club don't get to participate. So it's a very interesting point that we might come on and discuss the legal system and the structure itself, and how that originated.
I might ask both of you, how does the treatment of politically incorrect patriots compare to that of left-wing radicals over there?
Okay, shall I answer that one?
Go ahead, Mike.
And good evening, Paul. From our point of view, good morning, in fact. I've been involved in this movement for about 15 years now. On the political side mainly, and it's cultural and religious and as well, you know, but people only identify the political side, and they call you names because of your beliefs, etc. But the left can do, in answer to your question, Mike, the left can do virtually anything they want. The general public are witnessing that now with these protests that are going on, not just in America, but throughout the Western world, where the left, Antifa in particular, will and can do anything they want, even pulling statues down, attacking people quite openly in public, even killing people, and they're getting away with it. Whereas if we just say the wrong things, you know, speak the truth in public, they want to condemn us for it and put us in prison. A friend of Miko's, young Jack Renshaw, Jack was 21 when they put him in prison, and they've given him a 20-year prison sentence for simply getting drunk and saying, you know, this came out with a load of nonsense, just sitting in a pub, and he was up to his eyes in beer, and he said, well, I'm going to kill my MP. And he just came out with that. And I'm sure a million people have said something like that at some stage. And he was just a young lad full of beer. And, you know, he had no intention. I know him very well. He's actually a very strong Christian. And he's got Christian ethics, and he's a decent young man. He's not a thug. He's not anything like that. He's certainly not a terrorist. Yet they put him in prison for that for 20 years. And, you know, he wanted to appeal over it. And I suggested that he go down the road of the common law route, because I didn't believe he would get the appeal. He chose to go with a proper lawyer, and I understand his reason for that, because he said, well, you know, in fairness, you're not trained in law. This fellow is. He's advising me that they won't take any notice of doing it your way. So, you know, don't take offense, but I'm going to do things his way and apply for the appeal. So he applied for the appeal nearly 2 years ago, and he's been rejected. He's not being allowed an appeal. It was him who introduced me to Miko, and he said, well, you know, this friend of mine would like to do it down your way, through the common law route, that is. That's when, you know, Miko and I started speaking to each other and writing to each other, and I've taken it from there. But it's, you know, we're over two years down the road now, and it really should have been concluded by now, but they're making life difficult. And the position we're at the moment is that we had this hearing on the 10th of July, which was supposedly, I'll explain in a second, it was, I'd lodged an appeal. And when you lodge an appeal, you have to, there are certain documents that you have to hand in to the court or email to the court. And they all have specific names. Well, every one of those documents must be headed in the right format. And it says at the top of them, to the, you know, appeal in the High Court, in the appeal court or the High Court of Justice. And every one of them said the same thing. And then early in July, I got this contact saying, we're going to have, because of COVID-19 or COVID-1984, as it's now known in Britain, because of that, we're going to have this virtual hearing, and you know, it's going to take place on the 10th of July. So I then sent several questions with regard to this, saying, what exactly is going to happen? Why does it have to go ahead on Skype when the court has already got all of the information? And I'm quite happy for a judge to look at it lawfully and judge on the papers, the evidence that's in front of them. They said, no, we're going to do it this way. So when it came to the day, the 10th of July at 10:30, when it started, much as we're doing now, you know, we were having this conversation, and it was over the internet. I could see them, they could see me. And we had five witnesses. Paul was intended to join us, but he wasn't able to get onto the broadcast in the end. But we had five witnesses witnessing what went on. And as soon as I As I was, I'm the claimant, I had to outline our case at the start of the proceedings. And I started to explain. I said, well, as all the parties will know, everybody's had the documents from me and all the evidence with regard to this appeal. And I'm not allowed to introduce any new evidence because it must be the same evidence that the previous judge had before her. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would be unlawful. And the judge stopped me at that point and said, this is not an appeal. This is an oral hearing. And I said, why are we having an oral hearing? I never requested an oral hearing. I've requested, for 3 months now, I've requested an appeal. So the short answer to what they were doing, to, you know, for the sake of your listeners, maybe getting bored with the details of this, is that they were pulling a stunt, a legal stunt, to make it look to third parties as though I'd made two applications for this habeas corpus writ, and on both counts I'd been rejected. Now, the reason they were doing that is that once you've had two strikes, you can't apply for a third one, and you can't appeal. When in reality, I'd only made one application, and the second application I made was for an appeal of the first one, and they changed it over to this oral appeal. So the upshot of that was the judge came up with the same decision as the previous judge had done. And I told him, you know, I pointed out all sorts of legal maxims, laws, case law, things that he should have taken notice to, and he refused to, and he ruled against us. And just a week ago, I issued a declaration of void order against that particular scenario, because it was brought about unlawfully. So I've basically stricken out that that decision that was made on the 10th of July, and I've now reapplied to the High Court to renew the appeal application, and I'm waiting for their response.
I guess you should point out, too, that they've broken all contact between you and Miko, and he's also not been able to receive letters of support from me.
Yeah, you're quite right, Mike. I'm aware that you and I spoke of that before we came on air, and I forgot to mention it live. Just to give you a flavor of the habeas corpus procedure, when you apply for an application for a writ of habeas corpus, what you do is you hand it into the court to get the indictment. And then when you get the sealed indictment, you serve it on the prison governor. As soon as I served that indictment on him, he took the unlawful and also illegal precedent of blocking all contact between me and Mikkel. So I'm his representative, his lawful representative. He's my client. And he blocked all communication between us. That is highly unlawful. And it's also contempt of court. He should not have never been allowed to do that, but three judges so far have let him off with it and not even commented on the illegality or unlawfulness of it. Furthermore, when you...
Well, I think it should be mentioned that this whole situation goes beyond just corruption or a desire for power. It's evil and its roots are demonic.
Absolutely right. Yeah,
that's correct, and I think you can see that in the system itself, that it's structured in such a way that it is always like playing in a loaded casino. When you go into the court system, you're actually playing by their rules, and you're playing their game according to the way they want to play it. And this is the challenge that we have in today's society, in that not only are we in a society where there is this illusion of left and right, which does not really exist, but there is this Hegelian dialectic being played out, where two different purportedly opposing sides are offering alternatives that are not real alternatives. They are an illusion of choice in order to confuse the public, and it is the same in the court system. When you go into the court system and you investigate into it and look deeper, it It is very much a closed club. It is an institution that has been historically established to support a regime, and that system offers a law according to the laws of that regime. It does not offer justice, and that is the difference between perhaps the public perception of what justice represents and what it actually represents in reality. And I think we can see that in the MECO case with regard to how this case has been handled in such a way that any appeal has been rejected or technicalities have been used to override and ride roughshod over justice.
And I should mention that Nico is a dedicated Christian. He's not rabble like a lot of people, even in this movement.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Nico is a committed Christian. He's a decent man. He was in the British Army and had for 12 years and had an exemplary record of service with the British Army. And we started talking earlier, Mike, about what he was convicted of. One conviction was having supposedly being a member of that organization, but he was never a member of that organization. All he did was communicate with some people who were on social media. And, you know, he's entitled to his views. You know, he has very similar views to myself. I'm a committed Christian and also a nationalist, you know, and I'm a patriot. And I will tell the truth and shame the devil. I don't really care. And this is, you know, this is Miko's attitude. And that's, you know, they decided, well, we're going to tar him with the brush of being in this National Action thing. You know, lying.
Well, what he was actually trying to do was make contact with people of like mind that he could teach them the Christian identity message that we teach and he also believes.
Correct. And the other chap I mentioned earlier, Jack is a committed Christian as well. And, you know, Jack, and, you know, Miko's got a young family. You know, he's been married for several years. Jack's 21 and he was, you know, still single and used to, you know, people would take the mickey out of him because he was still, you know, he wasn't a deviant. He didn't carry on the way lots of people do, taking drugs and, you know, philandering and doing all this, that, and the other. He didn't believe in any of that. And certain people had to go with him for it, you know, people who have a strange sense of what's right and wrong these days. So, you know, they're decent human beings, these people. They're not doing anything illegal. Well, disregard illegal. They're not doing anything unlawful. You know, because they can claim that something is illegal just because they decide it is on the day. But Paul's absolutely right. Our judicial system is so corrupt nowadays that even the jury system is corrupt. Now, the jury system is supposedly the last bastion of democracy in the West. I, you know, if you've got a king, a ruler, or a government that is not abiding by the law of the land, the constitution, you know, the common law, then the last opportunity to correct that law comes to the jury when somebody's being prosecuted over that illegal, unlawful law. But when that happens nowadays in Britain, the jury is handpicked. In most cases, you know, the jury's handpicked, and I'll expand on that again in a minute, but they're instructed by the judge what they can and can't do. Now, to be directed by a judge is one thing, but to be controlled and manipulated by a judge is a completely different thing again. Now, when that jury decides what, you know, what decision they're going to come to, what verdict they're going to come to, they're not only trying the facts of the case, they're also trying the legislation involved. They have to decide whether that legislation is reasonable and lawful. And if it's not, they should find the person not guilty because of the fact that the legislation is unlawful to start with. So where we have a problem with that is, excuse me, We've done, over the years, we've done lots of surveys in high streets and town centres asking people, have you ever served on a jury? And the results come back time and time again that 8 out of 10 people have never served on a jury. Okay, so you keep that one, that fact in mind for a second. And then when we found the ones who had served on a jury, more often than not, they'd served more than once on a jury. So if you were a gambling man, and I'm not suggesting any of us become one or do that sort of thing, but a bookmaker would give you astronomical odds when 8 out of 10 of people have never served on a jury, and it's all supposed to be legal above board and, you know, randomly chosen. How on earth can you get 20% of those available to have done the job more than once? And in some cases, 5, 6, 7, 10 times. The reason is that, you know, they're part of this group that wants to go along with the snakes, with the cabal, and they know exactly what the judge wants from them. And then during the court, the barristers, as we discussed off earlier, the barristers are not allowed to challenge legislation either. And if they attempt to do that, the judge will stop them. And in Mikko's case, in fairness to his barrister, he tried to do that. He tried to challenge the fact that the proscription was unlawful and illegal because there was no evidence whatsoever of any violence by that particular group. And the judge stopped him. The judge stopped the barristers from speaking. He said, right, hold everything there. He then asked the jury to leave the court and go wait in the back room. When the jury had left the court, he remonstrated with Mikko's barrister and said, you are behaving wrong. You're misbehaving in this court, and you're effectively calling your colleague, the prosecuting barrister, you are calling him a liar. And the chap said, well, why? How am I doing that? And he said, well, he understands the legislation, and he's prosecuting somebody on the legislation, whereas you're questioning it, and you're not allowed to do that. And he said, well, of course I am. You know, and he explained what I've just explained. And the judge said, no, you're not. I'm not going to allow you to do that. And now I'm going to bring the jury back in. When the jury comes back in, you have got to apologize to your colleague for what you said before. So he did that. I brought the jury back in. And that made it 10 times worse because the jury didn't have any knowledge of what was said while they were out the room. All they knew was that what he said beforehand and the fact that he had to apologize for it afterwards. Now, in their mind, that was, he committed some heinous crime. When he hadn't done anything unlawful at all. Furthermore, when the judge was summoned up...
Not just the judicial system over there. I believe the officials in the prison are the ones holding up the mail and other similar acts.
Well, you have to understand who these people work for. They all work for the same people, don't they? This is a sovereign system, okay, in the UK. And all these people swear an oath to the Crown, and they all serve the Crown. They don't serve the people. They're not there to serve the people. Parliament serves the sovereign. The judges all serve the sovereign. And that is the veneer of respectability that is applied to the system. But it's worse than that because they all belong to the same clubs, the same societies, the same secret societies. They all uphold the same fraternity to a degree or not. And if they step out of line, like this particular barrister did, bravely enough, they are censored by the judge. They are brought back into line by the system. And in order to understand that process, you have to dig a little bit deeper into the system and see where it originates from. Because this isn't God's law we're talking about here. This is the law of man that has been developed over centuries by a certain fraternity of people who have sought to control society from the early days of civilization. And we can call it the law of Pharisees, if you like, because that's essentially what it is. If you track it back, it goes back to a particular group of people who worked through psychology and through religion in order to institutionalize certain organizations and certain structures in society, and to force mankind to conform to their way of doing things. Now, if you look at this as a battle between spiritual good and spiritual evil, you'll understand that this goes back to the times, the biblical times, to the fallen angels before that, and the people who are controlling the system serve that particular spiritual evil. And the world, as we know from the Bible, tells us that this is the devil's world, this is the devil's playground, that he controls through temptation, through deceit, through dishonesty, the actions of people here who seek to control and manipulate others. And that is the system we're up against. So when you join all of the dots and you start adding these things together, you can see the pattern, not only in terms of the present system and how corrupt and rotten that system is, in terms of not applying justice, which clearly is the case in the MECO trial, but also if you look back over hundreds and even thousands of years, you can see the same trend. And that is your indicator of spiritual evil at work, because mankind's lifetime doesn't span that duration. So for something to be consistently applied in a logical and intelligent way to create a system, to manipulate that system, there has to be a spiritual evil behind it. And that's what we're looking at. So one of the things I'd like the listeners to do is to think a little bit about that, to try and join a few dots, to try and link a few things together, because all of the things that are happening in our society are interlinked. And when we start looking at things that are going wrong in terms of environmental disasters, when we start looking at things that are going wrong with regard to the legal system and how it's poorly enforced or how it fails, which is a deliberate thing, it's designed to fail. If we start looking at the politicians and what they say versus what they do, when we start adding these things together, they all start to make sense. They all start to correlate into a pattern. And we're starting to see that now because of the times we're in. We're starting to see that these things actually do all interrelate to each other. Right now, we're going through this COVID-19 scenario, and there's lots of codes and lots of meanings behind things that we can delve into. I don't really want to spend today going into that. But I think to put the thought into the listener's mind, it's very important to understand that there's a structure to it. And if we look at the legal system as a system of Pharisees that goes back to the original people who wrote their laws based on the understandings of mankind and not those that were given to them by God, and we understand that that system evolved from the Phoenicians, who were the slavers of the world, who went out and enslaved the free people of the world, and who became the Venetians, who became the bankers, who became the people who were the merchants of the world, selling and buying slaves, and who then took that system forward in terms of using maritime law as a basis of slave law for the buying and selling of goods, which we now see in our court system. When we look at the process that the judge is the auctioneer, and he has a buyer and a seller, a prosecutor, and a defense attorney, and those two parties are bidding for the life or the soul or the contract of that individual that is in the court, that is in the dock, as you would in a port, going back to the marine theme that applies. So you can see these themes in everything in the structure of the system, and it's very important for people to start thinking about that and understanding that we as individuals are all sovereign. We don't have to behold ourselves to another individual person. We have an obligation where we cause injury or damage to a third party, that we are responsible for that damage or injury, but we are not responsible to anyone. We don't answer to anyone else. we answer to God. And that's the most important fundamental thing. When we get into playing within the system, we're playing in someone else's system according to their rules. And these are the kinds of things that happen. And this is what concerns me the most, is that this has now become a very overt evil. It is no longer hidden behind this veneer of respectability, and it is coming into the open in these days. And I think that's very important for people to understand and start paying attention to.
Yeah, Revelation 18 and elsewhere in Scripture tells us that this Babylonian system's going to fall quickly. It says in a day there. And Paul, I know you have a financial background. What does the current economic situation look like to you?
Well, the economic situation is being stoked up, let's say, for a collapse. And we've seen this trend several times before. We can go back through history and we can look at history of various wars that have taken place. The American Civil War, for example, was one example that listeners will be familiar with. World War One and World War Two also are another set of examples. But in each case, what happens before a global conflict? Well, first of all, there has to be an economic crisis, a crisis that creates certain drivers and certain criteria that will then be fulfilled through the process of mass unemployment and economic collapse. Now, we've started to see that here in the UK quite clearly with regard to the process that was referred to as Brexit, or as I like to call it, break it, because that's the coded word that they're trying to convey in the expression Brexit. And that is about breaking the economic system. Now, you might say, well, why would somebody want to break the economic system of a strong financial country? Well, the answer is a broader issue. If you start to delve into the UN and the global doctrine that is being put into place, and you look at things like UN Agenda 21 and UN Agenda 2030 for the global New World Order and the process of putting into place a global governance, a global government. Now, this is the plan. This is the plan. So they are trying to bring down national governments, and they're doing it by various means. In the UK, it is an economic battle. Brexit was about staying within the European Union or coming out of the European Union in terms of isolationism. That was the first stage of the process. And then, of course, we've had just recently the COVID-19 scenario, which is about closing every business down, except for the big five multinational corporations that are online that made billions of dollars of profit through continuing to trade during the crisis. But everybody else in the high street was closed down. And a number of small businesses will have gone out of business as a result of that. And that puts more pressure on the economy. So we're starting to see a process of restrictive practice, of limitation of economic opportunity, and mass unemployment. And mass unemployment was the main factor that was applied before those wars that I've mentioned. So you can see the trend. A developing trend that is very concerning. In America, we're seeing exactly the same thing happening, although we're seeing slightly different things happening to create those conditions. So, for example, we're seeing the Antifa and the Black Lives Matters movements being sponsored by George Soros, and we're seeing the conflicts that they're creating to create social tension. This might include, for example, recent cases of pulling down statues, monuments, traditional buildings, setting fire to infrastructure and causing mayhem that is part of a pattern that you would see during economic unrest prior to a war condition. So all of these things are being prepped as a process in order to create the right conditions for a global conflict. And that's where we're heading. That's where I believe we're heading with this.
I think so. Mike, is there something that those in our audience can do to help MECO?
Well, there is actually. Yeah, I mean, what they could do is write to the British Prime Minister and ask him why his prison service doesn't even conform to their own rules, let alone the law of the land. Now, you know, what we should all conform to the law of the land, as Paul said, and I agree with pretty much everything Paul said there, incidentally, and we are a sovereign nation. You know, a lot of people talk about democracy. Well, you know, we never had much in the way of democracy prior to 100 years ago, and what we've had since has been a pretense of democracy because, you know, they've only paid lip service to it. But the illusion is that people go out to the polling stations and vote for somebody, and they believe that's what they get a choice. But as Paul pointed out quite rightly, there's no actual left and right in terms of Parliament. You know, there's the blues and the reds and the yellows, and people just vote for a colour, but it's just a different management structure for the same bankers. So what people listeners could do to help MECO is write to Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister, and ask him why, particularly now when Black Lives Matter and all these other organisations, which are all left-wing motivated, are causing absolute mayhem all over Britain, why they're allowed to get away with it when ordinary British people such as MECO and around about 25 others are all serving long prison sentences for doing absolutely nothing unlawful. So how can they justify that? How can they justify the prison governors stopping communications, even though it goes right against everything within not only our constitution but also the Human Rights Act of 1998 as well? But they're doing it anyway.
There is no justification to the process. That is the point, indeed. They know that. They will try and label people or these organizations as left-wing so that they can label any dissent, any radicalism as right-wing. And this, again, is creating paradigms. The paradigm doesn't actually exist. The left is the right, and the right is the left. So paradoxically, communism, which is the big Western recognized bogeyman, if you like, for want of a better term, is the left. Whereas on the right, you have fascism, or Nazism, as some people call it, which is just controlling the opposite paradigm. But the right paradigm is no different to the left. If you look at Israel, Israel sits on the right. It genocides a lot of other peoples in its region, and it pushes Zionism as a global phenomena, which actually includes a lot of the social elite who are running organizations that are operating these paradigms. But when you look behind those people, there is also the communist flavor. And these two indexes are working together in cooperation by alternating the dialogue in order to create the dissonance and the disharmony in society and the mental instability, because it creates uncertainty in the mind of the individual. People believe that if they look at the opposite paradigm, they're going to find a solution there. But what they don't understand is that both sides of the argument are being controlled and manipulated. Mike mentioned earlier about other social issues and social problems that arise, and how people are pushed into the political system because of their beliefs, because they are trying to speak out about the system itself. And they're being labeled. They're being labeled as associated with this organization or that organization, when the reality is that people are speaking out God's truth. They're speaking out in their own mind. They're speaking out against the system. But of course, the system has to label them, so they have to find a box for these people to go into. And if they don't conform, if they don't fit in a box, then they're being taken out of circulation. And this is very serious. Again, going back to the war and the conflict scenario, before every conflict, there was always a roundup of intellectuals, of people who were outspoken against the system. The regime would gradually take over piece by piece through the media, control of the media, control of the economy, destruction of the economy, and then the process of gradual militarization. And we're seeing this process
right now. That's exactly what's going on today. We have less than a minute left. Do either of you have any concluding remarks?
Yeah, I would like to say something on that, Mike, as quickly as I can. To a large extent, there is a left-right paradigm, because a lot of the policies that we in the nationalist movement uphold is that, you know, the government, our own government, taking control of the issuance of money for a start, and bringing back or renationalizing our public utilities and services and transport and all the rest of it, all of those things that are vital for the country. We uphold all those beliefs, and so do the left. But they because we've been put in a particular box, people don't see those policies. They only hear the fact that, well, we're horrible, nasty people. The communists are okay, you know, as far as the government are concerned, because the bankers who control our government created communism because they want to destroy the Western world.
For sure. We're out of time. I'd like to have more time, but I'd like to thank you both for being on the broadcast tonight, but we just have to conclude it here.
You're most welcome.
Thanks, Mike.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message, and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a CD of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening, and send a donation to cover our cost, plus help with radio time, to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.